Welcome to the PI Podcast, political insights for the palaging inis. We are Matt and Borge, the co-hosts of the PI Podcast, and this is a special recording for the students of Professor Carl Mendoza, who is doing a class on politics in UMITA. So hello, say hello, Borge.
Hello.
Okay.
It's not my class. I'm not going to scare the shit out of students. It's not my class. So hello.
This is... For those of you who have never heard Borge's voice, this is uncharacteristically gentle and amiable. Bait nga eh, ang bait. Nakakatakot kasi. Anyway, so of course, our dear friend and colleague, Carl Mendoza, has reached out to us to talk to you about a topic entitled "New Politics and New Media and Ethics of New Media." Mm-hmm. So, and of course, he wants us to at least relate it to our experience as podcasters, basically as participants of new media. So maybe we can talk a bit of our background and our experience to how the podcast emerged. Would you like to start, Borge?
No, you go ahead. Go.
Yeah. Okay then. It started with my own interest in podcasting when I went to a different country, when we studied in China, my main barkada, ang barkada ko lang puro podcasts, and the weird thing is, these podcasts are ways in which we can, I consumed news analysis, sometimes comedy, sometimes in other forms of culture, and it exposes you to all kinds of people in the same way, perhaps radio chat and television channels used to, but at least personally, I can choose the ones that I like and eventually those that agree with my tastes. But that is actually quite dangerous, as I could create my own echo chamber with my own podcast. And then also with the podcast culture in the Philippines starting to boom with the pandemic. And so, of course, there were political podcasts, but they're not necessarily... Well, not the ones that I'm looking for. I mean, of course, with all due respect, they're doing their best, and they have valid views. So, of course, to create perhaps something that is a bit more critical, a bit more,
unhinged.
At least, a podcast that I would like to listen to personally, I would also get my dear colleague and very capable conversationalist, when we have great and deep conversations about politics and philosophy. And so hopefully, we were able to create at least some conversations that can perhaps change or affect or maybe contribute to the conversation about politics, since usually it's even to this day, it's usually one partisan side or another. But the difference between the reason why in a way, I got bored. While we are friends, we have very different political perspectives, and in a way that enriches the conversation. While I am a bit more, at least leaning to right of center, a bit more conservative or traditional, Borge is a bit further on to the left, perhaps. Yeah, would I call it far left?
Let's call it off the compass.
Off the compass, fine. It used to be, it's clear. We'll see about that. But perhaps, Borge, maybe you can talk about maybe how your experience of the podcast, and perhaps what you think of the media and our engagement with our listeners.
Yeah. It's been a nice 2-year ride and looking forward to more episodes. But yeah, the response that we got more recently, we're having more and more active participants. More and more active quote-unquote fans. But, end of the day, as you have said, it's about bringing out, our own conversations and letting people start their own. And key to breaking apart, partisan dichotomies is to be a bit unhinged, So,
yeah,
that's one thing that marks PI Podcast, even the title itself, as something separate. So we're here to contribute a more nuanced understanding of politics, philosophy, and whatever we can lay our hands on. But it's also here to make things a bit more unhinged so that people won't get stuck in their own asses. So, yeah, I think that's basically what podcasting is. I'm not an avid consumer of podcasts, first and foremost. So you were the one who introduced me to podcasts. I'm an avid fan of conversations, of course, and I think that's my starting point.
Do you remember like what kind of people that started, talking to us? Like, actually, believe it or not, guys, but a lot of people approached up Borge and slide into his DMs. Na parang, wow. So, Borge, kumusta yung mga tao? Anong klaseng mga tao ang lumalapit sa iyo?
Many of them are actually students. Many of them are actually students. Many are graduates of political science as well. So, yeah, we're attracting nerds at this point.
Well, yeah. It's basically people like us, a bit of outsiders that don't necessarily fit in one partisan or another. May mga tao na na nakikinig na may mga kakamping support ni Lenny, at meron din mga tao na support ni Isko. And there are some people who actually are supporters of the UNI team. But, yeah, so and they actually requested some topics, like for example, they want to ask about what were the topics that they requested. I believe it was
Federalism, I think, would be one.
federalism, was because it's a hot topic at least on the UNI team side, although we're getting into that. But I think one that we did do is, well, people from all sides, but I think there were people specifically from the UNI team that wanted were interested in what we had to say. That's the Machiavelli episode,
Oh,
which is especially when BBM claimed to be Machiavellian, so we can kind of talk about that. Weird thing is, the best thing about at least podcasting and content creator is it's a bit, well, we're a bit autonomous. In other words, we don't really have a boss. We do. We don't have anyone to say that, oh, you can't say this or say that. But we do have our own personal rules, and they have to make and to make sure we create content that is, responsible, ethical, and accurate.
Okay, can we flesh that out? What are our responsibilities as podcasters? What do you think?
Well, obviously, to say things that are factually true. We normally, not only do we edit things that are, well, we misremembered, which we have, and every time we record an episode, we actually record it and try to, well, we edit it and then we try and cut out the things that, well, the mistakes that we made. Insan hindi lang mga kasi I'm like, but also like, I mean, you said some super things. We don't need to specify them here right now. But also, we one thing that we do that I'm not sure other podcasts do, of course, some of our bet, well, our role models personally, is sometimes we send the sources so you can double check and read it for yourselves, especially when we do slice of PI, when we react to news articles. We always put it there, and sometimes even alternative views of other articles on the same subject there. So it's not really one-sided, it's not propaganda, it's not partisan. It's also multi-dimensional, and yeah, it's we try to be in a way intersubjective or objective, as much as we can. What do you think, El? Can you add to that word?
Ay, gumagaling readings on subjectivity and objectivity. But yeah, I would agree with that one. But I think another one of our silent code of ethics would be, not to fall into any partisan lines. So that's one thing. And to an extent, we have taken it to an extent that we are anti-partisan even. So, that's the responsibility of trying to stand between warring parties is relatively heavy, simply because, again, there's so much pressure trying to go the other way. But again, we try to be as multidimensional, multi-perspective as possible. And I think that's the key to what you may call being objective is. Being objective is about letting the object unfold on its own, and that requires, moving around different perspectives. So it's not only about distance from the object itself. It's just about, flexibility moving here and there, trying to look at the same damn thing from different angles, and you end up providing different pictures, sometimes even contradictory. So, and I think one of the best examples of our ethics would be our take on the presidential candidates.
Oh yeah.
When we had to steel man them.
Yeah, when you say steel man, we had to make the best argument for voting for all of them, even Manny Pacquiao, Isko, and BBM. And we tried our hardest. And apparently that's one of our actually that's one of our most viewed and listened to episodes, when we tried to talk positively about each and every candidate, you know, the presidential candidate, even
Mangundato.
Mangundato. Oh yeah, Faisal Mangundato. Or even the doctor, I can't remember his name anymore, but anyway,
It is the doctor.
just say doctor, or of course, let's see. Yeah, so, but speaking of which, you know, especially to differ the flavor of our podcast, we also make episodes and guest people who really have different viewpoints with us. We've, and especially through our ideology, Understanding Ideology series, where we talk to people with very clear partisan lines. Like we talk to someone like, I believe Jay Aruga from the conservative, well, the first conservative podcast in the Philippines. We also talk to a,
Feminist.
well, Tantadong Kal, well, Tantadong Kalbo, you know, who's just one of our favorite guests, you know, but we think he's actually quite interesting. You can't pin him down. He's not quite, he has supported Lenny, but he has also been critical of Lenny, especially with the, what was it called, that the Yasista thing that got him in trouble with the Kakampinks. And yeah, like you mentioned, like a feminist, which neither of us knew any, a lot about gender or women's issues. And yet, of course, it took us a, more than a year to guest a woman or a woman philosopher in our podcast. So at the very least, while it's been said that, well, the algorithm shows you what, you know, are you're interested in and continues to reinforce your existing views, at least in our podcast, we choose and curate our guests to make sure that they, in a way, are able to challenge our views, and we're able to, well, challenge their views and are willing to be challenged. So, yeah. Any other
And
guests that you found interesting? Yeah.
no, it's not more of a guess, but the two things. First, since you mentioned algorithms already, I think this would be one challenge that we are trying to, encourage people to break, which is, algorithms, they work on the lazy. So you need extra effort. You need much effort to try to expose yourselves to differing perspectives. And one, and going on to the second point is we also have Twitter spaces and no, we interact with pro-Marcuses of all people. So yeah, it takes much. It takes much, but I at this point it is necessary if you actually want to break, polarization in the Philippines. It takes much to conscious effort to expose yourselves to other people's perspectives and try to learn from them. That's another thing. Try to learn from them.
And
So
take
our
note that, yeah, we actually were, of course, tempted, or maybe me more than you actually, to in a way try to change them and change their mind. But at the same time, when you do that, you know, sometimes that's no longer really, you know, listening. And in fact, you kind of, in order for you to continue to talk to them, you have to build trust. But you might break their trust if you're trying to, again, evangelize them with the gospel of liberalism or Lenin or whatever thing that you have. So in some cases, you know, that's one thing that, in a way, we talked about, you know, in the, in, when in episode three, Why Can't We Be Friends? We talk about why there are so many fights and toxic internet cultures. Because in a way, it's a fight of trying to convince each other or say proving that you're right and the other person is wrong. And while I continue to make that mistake, you know, I do try to at least try to curb that, you know, and perhaps we try to tell our listeners too that when we engage in people internet, try to, number one, assume that they know something you don't, that there is something you can learn from them. But at the same time, again, the goal is not to evangelize or to well, to change their mind, but maybe to at least have a conversation, not to force them to think about it, but maybe to say, well, what do you think about this? I mean, you can challenge them, but just make sure that it can, it's still productive. You know, I think that's one thing that is, that smartphones actually have opened up for us. So there's an opportunity to learn from other people. You need to talk to all different kinds of people. You can break away from your echo chamber. You can create your echo chamber, but you can break out of it. But when, once you're confronted with someone else, you know, someone different, then that's an opportunity again to learn something from them and not only to teach and, you know, preach to them. You know, that's a weird thing. Yeah. That's where the culture of let me educate you came from, in that it is very real. And we, well, maybe I'm more guilty, you know, in on that, you know, but it's a challenge, so it's not easy, but we have to make sure that this conversations are constructive. Yeah. So that's well, that's the basic part of our experience at podcasting and political spaces, you know. But I suppose we can go into the topic here, which it, that was asked by Professor Carl, and that is basically how smartphones have affected or impacted, you know, Philippine politics in general. And there are you and the students actually gave very interesting questions. So we kind of, instead of going through them one by one, since they can be similar, we go through subheadings. And the first subheading at first, you know, how has smartphones impacted or affected political participation, and most especially during the elections, because it's one of the highly politically charged seasons in our country. So what do you think, Borge?
Again, well, people are more aware about the processes in registering and voting. That's one thing, that's for sure. So they're more aware about how to vote and where. Other than that, they're more exposed to the campaign materials, whatever they may be. They be black propaganda or good ones, but they're more exposed to it. So I think the primary impact of that one, at least for voting, is that people are more informed. The question is, what are they informed about? So that's another issue, which again, I think it would be
Or how
the
do they
next.
process that
Yeah.
information?
How do they process that information? Which again is something that smartphones don't give you. It would give you information. It would allow you to get information. I think that's a more appropriate term. I don't want to look at smartphones as if it's a living entity on its own, even if it's transforming into one slowly and gradually, but it is not. It's a mechanism, it's a tool we use. So it allows us to get more information, but doesn't teach us how to process them. And this is where, as you have mentioned earlier on, the issue of algorithms would come in. Social media, I'm not going to say smartphones per se, but social media itself is designed to perpetuate biases. It's designed to feed on your preferences. So, and I think that's another issue about that one.
Well, I think we have to define, of course, what political participation is and what it constitutes. And in some ways, you know, liking and resharing to an extent is political participation. But has it, of course, translated to actual political action? You know, in some ways, there are, like what you said, people have registered, people have actually left their house and tried to register to vote, and sometimes went to the different rallies because the call to the rallies or in hashtags or in tweets, in Instagram posts, etc. And of course, it actually strengthened the popularity and engagement of certain candidates, you know, because they see their friends as Kakamping or UNITIM or Isko or Manny Pacquiao or whatever. Then they're able to at least be engaged or enjoyed to an extent. But again, we need to make sure to temper these expectations. It's not ultimate, it's not absolute, you know. I think the fact that we're asking this question, you know, we have to put it in its place. It's not that it is the end all and be all, you know. On the one, it has its dangers, but also at the same time, it can, in a way, paralyze you and get you stuck to your seat. Why go out and talk to different people when you could talk to sometimes even anonymous people who have no accountability for what th things that they say? So it could also be a trap. You know, again, a tool can be useful, but it can also backfire if you don't know how to use it. So,
It
yeah, in
depends
other
on
words,
the yeah, it depends on the interests behind it.
So at this, we have to, again, I think, but in what sense is participation online, and in what sense, and how much of it is offline? Like,
Yeah, that's
what
the
do you think,
issue.
Borge? What's the, yeah, what can you
Okay.
say about that for now?
As far as literature is concerned, again, political participation would, in the broadest sense, would be any activity directed at the political issue. Now, you have the works of Van Dethe, if you want to, if you want to read those. He actually wanted to classify different types of participation. But one thing that he recognizes is this. At this point, through social media, through smartphones, through technology, through modern technology, there's now an increasing number of individualistic, vanity-driven types of participation. That you participate just to feed your own vanity. This would
To be
include,
cool.
political lifestyles would be there. Even in our own, even in the previous elections, Have you ever seen someone who went to a Kakamping rally without taking a selfie?
Yeah.
So everyone's taking a selfie. They want to show themselves as politically active.
Mm-hmm.
Is feeding our vanity good or bad? That's a different issue that we must all tackle, but I'm posing the question now.
Mm-hmm.
If you're participating in politics and you're feeding your vanity, is that a good
mm-hmm.
thing?
Mm-hmm.
So I leave that question to our listeners. But yeah, so
mm-hmm.
it's as far as studies are concerned, it's making political participation more individualistic.
Mm.
Even if you collect them in one place, it doesn't mean that they're actually a collective.
Mm.
And to an extent, it also gives the illusion of effectiveness, even if, as you mentioned, it's not necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, take this into account. Not all parts of the Philippines have good internet connection,
mm-hmm.
first and foremost. So if you're focusing on social media campaigns, then you need to take that into account.
Mm-hmm.
The more effective social media campaigns are basically those that can be passed around through word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And that is already, to an extent, a distinct, you know, a distinct structure already in human affairs.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is something that you may agree with. Let's just not overestimate the
mm-hmm.
impact of technology.
Mm-hmm.
And turn our attention towards more fundamental issues like the political psychology that we have, our behavior,
mm-hmm.
and our relationships with other people.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that popped into my mind, of course, part of participation is, of course, perhaps like donating resources, like madali na mag-donate sa mga rallies, like via GCash or PayMaya and all that. And in some ways, it makes it easier, you know, to mobilize resources. But I don't know. Do you think this has improved like political participation, at least in terms of like expressing support by donating, you know?
Yeah, I think so. Resource mobilization theory would take that into account. And I think from that perspective, improvements in ICT have actually facilitated
mm-hmm.
The mobilization of resources. But then again, mm-hmm. resources are not only material. You also
mm-hmm.
need warm bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And you also need experts.
Right.
So yeah, but at least for the money part, yeah, you know, you can easily donate to someone's campaign at this point.
Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, kind of... I'm trying to remember, like, this is the issue right now, that anonymity is no longer an issue.
Mm.
Once you send money, kita yung buong pangalan mo, kaya minsan, ano, nagiging scam na siya, you know? Like, they can have access to all, your whole name. So that's dangerous. So I suppose that they're trying to change that, but it's both an opportunity and, of course, an obstacle. Like, if they're able to get access to that, lagot ka na, di ba?
Depends on who's handling it.
Exactly. So be careful with your GCash and PayMaya. Although daw sabi daw parang effective against scammers yung PayMaya, diba? You don't remember that one? Anyway, that's a good, interesting commercial na parang mga scammers to. Anyway, so let's move. Are we ready to move to the next subheading? I think some people asked, okay, how has smartphones and social media perhaps affected the issue of disinformation, misinformation? Well, and propaganda or historical distortion, all of this. And this is a very hot topic. I mean, you've spoken about this a lot, but perhaps for the listeners here, for the students, what can you say about that? Because like what we said, there's a lot of information going in. So
I think the primary effect would be, first and foremost, accessibility and circulation.
Mm-hmm.
So the technology, ICT, improvements in ICT have allowed the propagation of such things, and if you're looking for it, you can find it. So yeah, I think that's the primary impact. And of course, we go back to the issue of algorithms. It's basically structuring our everyday thinking,
right?
That if we are dependent on our iPhones, bato-bato sa langit ang matamaan, ewan ko lang sa inyo. But if you're dependent on your iPhones, then the structure of how you think on a daily basis is basically shaped by your exposure to such things.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think that's the only two things that I can think of.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Ikaw,
you know, that's a weird thing. And I think a few people who talk to us, you know, about our podcast, listen to our podcast, actually have joked and say, maybe when are we entering like TikTok? Because TikTok, again, is filled with like dance videos, comedy videos, but also slowly, you know, propaganda and political education. There are some things that are of course, UNITEAM, and of course, who are pro Marcos. There are also those who promote EDSA and history, like Mighty Magulang, and slowly, I think, Xiao Chua also. So important, important historians have gotten into that. So that's in TikTok. But sorry, can we pause to hear that?
Yeah, I know. Regarding TikTok, ang problema kasi dyan is it's perpetuating this, you know, small piece information trend, which I am not in favor of. It is such a thing perpetuates shallow thinking. Too bad.
Yeah, but it's possible, you know. While we do have ideas. I do have ideas about TikTok, but the kind of content we are trying to at least promote is actual, at least proper conversation, which you cannot have shortcuts to. Our episodes are actually quite long, and in a way, it has in a way limited our marketability. Like most people want to listen to 20-minute or 15-minute podcasts, but you know, we normally try to do podcasts and end when we are satisfied, or at least progressed into the issue, and not just okay, here's it. Although we have tried to release shorter things like Slice of PI. Yeah, where we talked about news items and limited to 20 to 30 minutes, but that's as short as we can go. But it's at the same time, when you're bombarded with information, sometimes the easiest thing to digest is like a 10-second stinger or a 10-second video of someone dancing or a joke.
Yeah.
So, in some ways, can we tell people to stop
doing TikTok? I will. Stop.
Oh, wow.
I would simply say stop. You know what? First and foremost, how do you manage a diet, a digestive system? If you want to slim down, you need to eat less. And by eating less, your digestive system would adjust to it. Hence, you could no longer process more and more food through time. The same goes with your brains. If your brains are content with if they're content with small piece of information, if they could only digest that, if you would not practice your brains to try to process bigger and bigger information, then, you know, you would end up playing with mud puddles instead of going deep. So, yeah, I would say that stop.
All right. Well, I won't be as hardline as you, but people have said the same thing with Wikipedia. And while we do say don't cite Wikipedia, Wikipedia can be like a gateway to other things. So if a TikTok made you curious, try to go if it engages with you, if it's done by like someone attractive or something, okay. But if it's an information that you have doubts about, then look into it, you know, double check, triple check. So at least it could be, if you can't stop, at the very least, you know, double check or triple check what they're saying, what they're saying is true. In fact, there are things like, as 1 minute, you know, they talk about things like literary, like I noticed literary things like Hans Christian Andersen, especially about Little Mermaid and how apparently a lot of people are saying, is that really true? You know, that read here for yourself, you know, I mean, I think a few people shared it. Apparently Little Mermaid is a story about his love for another man. So like, really? Okay. But apparently then read it, you know, if it gets your attention, because it only says that, but it doesn't say where they got it. You can't show the source in TikTok. So at the very least, when you do TikTok, at least that's what Google's for. So try to search it. It's like, is this true? You know, then, yeah.
But okay. That would be a good compromise. Just, you know, make sure that whatever TikTok you have is actually expressing something that would make someone curious instead of convincing them.
Exactly. And perhaps maybe something about anything about like historical distortion, like specifically with martial law and EDSA and all that.
That, you know, as far as I'm concerned, whatever you're looking at, the myths circulating around, those things have been here ever since. So what social media and what ICT or improvements in technology have done is simply to make it perpetuate faster. But those things, they've been here ever since. So yeah, you just
specified
it.
I do have one more question under this one, you know, and I think it's, well, a lot of people in response to misinformation go into fact checking or creating their own version of it. So to be a part of it, sometimes when you do that, you become part of the sea of content. And sometimes, even if you make it, you know, sometimes people won't see it. And admittedly, even this podcast gets lost in the sea. You know, hopefully you're able to listen to it. But, you know, yeah, it's so is it encouraging to maybe create like content? And how do they, what can you say they can create content without committing the same sins, or at least being effective about it?
Yeah, no, I think the focus should be on helping people process this sea of information. I think that's the goal. And I think that's, to an extent, also one of our goals in starting this podcast. It's not to, you know, join in and plop around in this sea of information. It's about helping people process this massive information. Because as far as I'm concerned, and as far as political psychology is concerned, technology had progressed faster than our own mental capacities. So we are not yet geared as a society to process so much information. What we are more or less geared to is to select as much as we can to perpetuate whatever bias we already have. So yeah, and again, this leads us to an issue that is external to, but still related, which is the issue of education.
I think we could move to the next question, which is, I think there's a few questions that talked about like accountability. I think this is very important because with the smartphone, you know, almost if you have a smartphone, you're automatically, well, you have the capacity to publish like photo, you're a journalist, you're like, you have a video camera, so you can either be a filmmaker or even like a photo, like a video journalist. And then be a citizen patroller like they do it in TV Patrol. And even, of course, you can post it on the web and in social media. So anyone can be an artist. Anyone can be a journalist, actually. So in a way, they can also hold people like accountable. But at the same time, as content creators, in a way, they also have to hold each other accountable. So perhaps we could talk about that. Like how does smartphones affect like being able to hold people accountable?
Well, it's there first and foremost. So you have at least two lingering issues. Do we have other systems to keep people accountable that would simply use inputs from those smartphones? You know, whatever you create out of that, you know, as an input to a larger structure. And second, is there a structure to deploy this technology to, you know, keep people in check? For example, just a possible example is you deploy, you know, smartphone journalists or new media or alternative journalists. You deploy them in local council meetings. Maging vlogger sila dun. You know, keep an eye on local councilors and whatever decision they make. We have such a system. So I think it's sandwiched between, you know, other structural things in order for it to be useful. It must be sandwiched between political structures that would actually harness such technology. But it is there. Too bad at this point. Kanya-kanya muna. So, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'm sure. Well, there's another question here about much. I think if you notice, like maybe, I don't know if our parents in particular, it's, for us, it's YouTube and TikTok and Twitter. For them, it's Viber chat groups and Telegram chat groups. So mass texts, you know. So these are much simpler and low tech. But, you know, this has been going on, I think. And other questions say, how much has it changed? In a way, it has only amplified what has always existed, because there has been fake news through text, in fact. And it has also been, text has also been used to mobilize movements during Bill Power 2 and during time of you know, President Estrada, when he was being deposed by EDSA. In some ways, both the like the EDSA 2 and EDSA 3 were both via text. So yeah, and so in some ways, not a lot has changed, you know. But at the same time, not a lot of the rules have changed. You have to verify your sources. That has never changed. You have to be responsible for your sources. Double check before you share.
Well,
you
it's know? Becoming easier to, you know, avoid those rules. And I think I'm reminded of Marx and his analysis of technology. Eventually, technology, we may have created it, but eventually it can create us. So it would start restructuring our relationships with other people. So, for example, you said that there's a rule to cite your references. That rule is easier or is better implemented under traditional media. But now that there's an explosion, that rule have ceased to be an easily, implementable norm. It now became a rule that you should have a government regulatory body to implement because it's way harder. So hindi na siya norm. It's actually just supposed to be an externally imposed rule. So yun ang problema dyan eh. So I think at this point we are observing how technology in general, especially social media, is currently shaping the quality of our own lives. Already mentioned that one earlier on, which is if you're dependent on your phone, if you look at it on a daily basis, how your mind processes things would be dependent on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, kung ang kaya lang ng utak mo ay 1-minute videos, masasanay na yung ganyan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
that actually, I don't remind you that. I think that's exactly the words of my dad. But that is important. I think the best thing to do, I suppose, let's move to the next question, of course. How do we curb and manage the excesses of the smartphones and social media? Is there a need for regulations and countermeasures? Well, before we get to regulations, I think it's really important to have our own discipline and control and perhaps dietary planning. If we can plan our meals, we also have to plan our consumption of social media. So I suppose some people can limit it to 2 hours in a day, although it's very difficult since we manage everything. Our email is there, our work is there. So it's harder and harder. Some people can't handle it since classes are in the internet, in Canvas, which you can do it on your phone. We teach actually in our own university, and people go into class with our phone sometimes. I have held class on my phone, which again makes our job easier, but there are actually costs, you can't control a lot, if they're doing anything. Minsan nagdodota nga habang nagkaklase, or minsan nag YouTube kung ano-ano, di ba? Mga orange websites, no? Rappler, di ba?
Kala ko yellow websites eh.
On Nickelodeon, mga Nickelodeon website. Anyway, so a lot of it has to do still lies with disciplining individuals. And we sound like parents, but I suppose we should take that our own advice. No, I admittedly know a lot of it. Or at the very least, if you can't limit it, at least force yourself, if you're in there, to try and go into looking at the other side. If there's a pro Lenny space, there's also a BBM space. So I try to do a bit of both.
You know, my practice with that one is, in utilizing ICT. Again, going back to my previous comment on dietary, pag lumit yung bituka mo, malit na lang makakain mo. I actually exposed myself to so many documentaries on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many documentaries on YouTube. So that's one thing that you can actually, indulge in at this point in time. So, I think a dietary plan for social media is not only about limiting your use. It's about regulating what you consume. So, again, let me reiterate, stop consuming small infographical nonsense. Just try to consume entire documentaries. It's out there. Just take time to do it.
I don't know. I normally take breaks in between documentaries. They need to, it's like vegetables. It's good for you. I suppose, do you think there should be laws, regulating said information and content? Because there have been talks about, for example, there's the cybercrime. There's also anti-terror to an extent. There's also, right now they're going to try and regulate streaming websites, and they increase the ambit of what's it, MTRCB. So is this all necessary? And I think to accompany the cultural change we should have, because personally I think that norm would be enough. But what do you think? Should there be regulations in addressing these new issues?
Okay, for our listeners here, my question would be this one: if there are regulations, where will they stop? If there are regulations, if you start regulating media, where will you stop? And remember that we, most of you don't have power. Power lies with somewhere else. So do you trust that the powerful will not abuse such a precedent if they start regulating media? Second point is, are the problems we are encountering with technology actually based on the technology itself, or is it based on the people using it? So I don't want to give my opinion on this, but you know, just since you asked, I don't want to, but I'm leaving the question to our listeners here. If you start regulating, where will you stop? Do you trust the people to stop, or do you trust the powerful to stop? And what is more problematic, the users or the technology? So yeah, I'm leaving those two questions.
Right. Well, I think there are if your concern is fake news, misinformation, well, people have doubts about this, but there are mechanisms in place. Like, you can report them, you know, you can block them. But again, they normally come back. And so do they deserve to be completely like blocked forever? And like some people, like for a time, Trump is still blocked from Twitter, you know, because of that. But then again, that is an undemocratic, quote unquote, thing to do, you know? So as to maintain like that democratic spirit, you know, I suppose, I think we should maintain individual responsibility, you know? So I do agree. Although there are issues wherein I think there needs to be more work. Like, for instance, you know, well, minors, for example, there have been, you know, unsavory content in Twitter involving minors, or even minors being exposed to like fights and cursing on their social media. Like sometimes, like, of course, even my own brother, actually even myself included, when I think there's a time where you can't have a Facebook account if you're a minor, but apparently we could just fake it, you know, and say that we're born in 1990 instead of 1992, and then poof. So besides this, so I don't know if there needs to be something like that, no, but I think it should be around that. But in terms of like governing the activities of adults who are more or less of sound mind and consenting, you know, we should keep it to a minimum, though. I think that adults are capable of acting responsible and hold each other accountable as well. So, and I suppose this leads to our last question, which is, how has smartphones and social media impacted democracy?
People did. People affected democracy through social media and through technology. I mean, that's my only answer to that one.
I suppose by extension, it only amplified what was already there. No? It just increased its intensity, you know, like basically, well, I don't know, like in terms of like, can you reflect, Borge, how has, in a way, social media affected your own like attitudes since before and after, like since 2009, and then
actually didn't
at
people
all?
did not it just made me more exposed to such bullshit, and it's other people's bullshit. It's not mine, nor is it social media's, quote unquote. But then again, we could not deny that in social media there's now a space for people to harass everyone else. So I would modify my argument and say that yes, the effect that social media may have had on democracies, that it created a space wherein people, citizens, could simply whack each other. But even that argument is still based on the basic premise, which is social media did not affect democracy. We did. We just used social media.
Well, it's weird. No, I think in a way it needs to be like a mutually reinforcing kind of thing. Like, while we affect social media also, in a way, affects us. So, so we are also exposed to the other people, and people that we never thought would exist. There they are, you know, like people who have done things and who have said things that we never thought that they would, you know. We're exposed to both the stupidest things, but also maybe by occasion, some smart and brilliant insights. So,
I can also admit the mutually reinforcing process. I can also admit that.
Yeah, like more like more people are exposed to more of society. So I
Yeah.
suppose it's difficult to say how much of it has impacted. The only thing that we can say is that it just has not been okay, like in terms of like the is it according to someone's like is it can it be analyzed linearly in the way we
It's
the,
not.
both you and I agree it's like it's cyclical.
Yeah.
So we've changed, but also it changes us.
Yeah.
So it's in some cases there are things that remain the same, and like for instance certain liberal aspects and anti-liberal values, we are simply exposed to them more. So
Yeah.
we should in a way accept that like these are not necessarily products of social media alone. In fact, even the Cambridge Analytica, you know, those things like the algorithms, they actually do not create new human beings necessarily. You know, they simply like tickle parts of the society that's already existed. So yeah,
Yeah,
parts of the brain that are already there. Yeah.
it may be a cycle, but it's not an egg or chicken thing. It started with us. So it may be a cycle now, it's a self-perpetuating cycle. It started with human action, and it can very well change through human action as well. So yeah, I think that's another point that I would like to make. And that's why I could not say that social media affected us, because that would make it a closed system. We could not escape from this shit. But since it may be a cycle, but it started with human action, then it can also change through that. So, depende lang sa atin kung gusto natin gawin sa technology na meron tayo.
So, how about this? Has it made us more democratic or less?
It just made the undemocratic louder. And the more democratic will have more opportunities to expand democracy. They now have more opportunities to expand democracy, but the more undemocratic, the illiberal, the intolerant, they are now more louder. So way, way, way more louder than before. So yeah.
So in other words, how then should we can we answer this question in a more systematic way, in a more holistic way? So we have to, how do we assess democracy in relation to social media then?
Yeah, I think I would agree with that question. I can just leave it at that. But
Okay.
analytically, I think we need to, stay away from emphasis on disinformation, stay away from emphasis on the dominance of technology, and go back to the political psychology behind that technology, and it's being fed by that technology and harnessing that technology. So, yun lang ang advice ko. So I would leave that question, but there are analytical thrusts that we can do just to steer the conversation to something a bit more fruitful than, it's all this disinformation's problem, whatnot.
I suppose I can agree that you know the power is still in our hands. You know, that's the weird thing, you know. Like there's a common panic like technology is taking over us, you know. In some case, if we allow it to, yeah. But at the same time, we can still choose to turn it off or lock it, or there are some apps that control our access. I believe that, well, there's one that's Pomodoro, the other one is, I can't remember what it is. Like it deactivates your internet, you know, when after a certain after for a certain time period. So try to find those. But yeah,
Curiously, I don't think technology is taking over us. People behind those technologies are. So it's a veil to the powers that may be. Anyway.
So I suppose we still ha control how much we consume
Yeah.
and what we consume and how we consume.
Yeah, and if
So
we don't
yeah.
have control over those, someone else have.
So at the same time, while they, well, the powers that be exist, yeah, like we can choose to take it a bit, taste it, and then maybe back away, or you know, take it all in. So it's dependent on satin. So yeah, I think that's basically. So I suppose we can also say to ask more questions. You know, like.
Yeah.
That are in a way beyond the we can question the questions actually. We in a way we have questioned the questions of you know Carl Mendoza in a way, but yeah, of course he's the ex he's the researcher in global communications. But take note that in politics, the political animal is still man. You know, this is not the computer or the algorithm or the bot. Yeah. Well, I
Okay.
suppose maybe one last thing we can say. What about the possible existence of robots, AI? I think that's another thing we can
Yeah,
explore.
that's another issue.
So yeah, hope you enjoyed our little talk on, social media and smartphones. We all own one. We can't say we're better at it, but we can. All we can say is we need to control. It is not the enemy. We don't need to erase it or crush it. But it's a tool that we have to learn how to use properly and with moderation.
Yeah. How could it be an enemy if it has so much porn?
Whoa. Okay. Oh, ethical porn, hopefully. Between, ethical porn, illegal porn. Anyway. So yes, that is the PI podcast. If you like that, please check more of our episodes at Spotify, YouTube, and Anchor. Or if you have any questions or suggestions for us, simply send us an email at pipodcastph@gmail.com. If you have any more questions, maybe you can send it to your teacher. He can send it to us, and we can answer it. So yeah, thank you for having us, and until the next time.
Magandang gabi, mga ka-PI.